May it please the court. I'm here to discuss today what looks like on paper a complex case, but the appeal is a relatively simple issue. It's certainly not as complex as the number of words or pages that have been briefed to this court or the years that this case has been in litigation.
Well, before you get on with it, can you just, how much money does the receiver have now? How much of the $600,000 was dispersed? It was a little unclear to me.
Your Honor, I don't know how much of it. The court ordered a dispersal of funds that the receiver was holding after this appeal was filed, but I don't know how much of that has been dispersed to date. I know that the receiver also has other assets, though, that it's seeking to collect money or liquidate that are other assets of the receivership estate.
Okay.
Essentially, we're here today on what is a contract interpretation issue, in essence, and whether Sonco complied with its obligations under that contract. Lastly, if this court would find that Sonco didn't comply with that, was the sanctions order that was entered by the judge a proper order, or was it an improper criminal punitive fine? So first I'd like to turn to the contract interpretation issue. There was a January 10, 2010 agreed order. And the question is, did it actually require Sonco to become the operator of certain Texas oil wells, as the district court found it in contempt of not becoming? And there is only probably one thing that the receiver and Sonco agrees on, and that is that this order never explicitly requires.
What is going on here? I am not an expert in Texas oil law. And I don't really understand what's going on. What is it you plan to do with these oil wells?
Well, I don't personally plan on doing anything, but
a really stupid comment.
I'm sorry.
I'm asking you, what is your client, what was it planning to do with these oil wells when it agreed to this order in January 2010?
Your Honor, certainly my client would eventually plan on, of course, getting oil out of them. But being the operator of the oil wells and being the one who owns the oil wells and gets the profits from those oil wells is not necessarily the same thing.
My question, what did it plan to do with these oil wells? Was it going to operate them? Was it going to hire an operator? Was it going to let the oil sit in the ground? What was it going to do?
Sonco was planning on becoming the operator, although it didn't necessarily know that it would remain the operator. There were some issues that had to be resolved with the Texas Railroad Commission because the oil wells had sat for such a long time. So not all of the oil wells would necessarily be producing.
Because the oil wells had what for such a long time?
I'm sorry, sat and
what
and
does
had
that
not,
mean, the oil wells had sat for a long time?
Nothing had been pumped out of them for...
When did Sonco acquire these oil wells?
They were deeded from the receiver in March of 2010.
No. It had before that.
Sonco had...
What's the history of Sonco's involvement with these oil wells?
Significant, Your Honor. My client had a production payment agreement, which is not an ownership interest...
Go back to the beginning. What is the beginning of Sonco's involvement with these oil wells?
It's Sonco's position that there came a point in time...
Would you tell me when, start from the beginning, not come a point in time, what is the history of Sonco's involvement with these oil wells?
Your Honor, Sonco took an ownership interest in them some time...
When?
Before the receiver's involvement.
When?
Your Honor, I apologize. I don't know the exact date of when they originally took it.
I don't want an exact date. Tell me an approximate date.
Your Honor, I know it was before the time that this receivership started in 2000. So it was prior
before
to 2000.
Before 2000. Okay. And so what? So that's before 2000. That's 12 years ago. Now what's been going on in the interim? Acquires these oil wells in the 90s. And now what happens next?
There were more than one entity that were both claiming an interest in the oil wells, which is what gave rose to the receivership claiming an interest in them. As part of the receivership action, the district court indicated that the receiver had an interest in them and allowed other people who had an interest in these same oil wells, these oil wells as well as some other oil wells, to stake their claim as part of the receivership, which Sonko did in 2003 or 2004, made a claim to the district court that it also had an interest in these oil wells.
What is this interest in the oil? You said in the 90s, did it own the oil? What was the interest in the oil wells?
Your Honor, there are a number of interests that people have in oil wells. There's the people who own the ground.
What is Sunco's interest in the oil wells?
It had two interests in them via agreement.
What is the interest? Is it stock? Is it an option?
Your Honor, one of them was a production payment agreement, which gave it an interest in the profits that came out.
Of course, it's never produced any oil. So they have a production.
That's right, Your Honor. That was an agreement that it got before.
It's totally phony. They have an agreement to receive payments when the oil is sold, but they've never taken any measure to start pumping the oil.
Well, Your Honor, that's not exactly accurate. I'm sorry, Your Honor. At some point while the receivership was going on, there was an action in Texas that was totally separate from this, although the receiver was involved in it, where my client was trying to take over operations of the oil wells, was awarded to do so in Texas before the district court issued a stay of it being allowed to do that, so that its ability to go in and operate them as a result of the ownership interest that it had at that time that it was cut off by the action that was occurring in the district court. And it was as a result of that that has brought us to this point today, where there was ultimately a settlement agreement between the receiver and Sonko.
This agreed order of 2010, didn't this say that Sonko it was assumed from the order that Sonko was going to operate or get an operator or do something and produce oil, right? That's what it's all about.
It was about Sonko certainly taking the receiver's interest in these wells, but whether Sonko itself had to become the operator was never explicitly stated, as this court requires it to do to be found in contempt.
It's totally implicit. I mean, the whole purpose was to get the oil going, right? Otherwise, this property is totally worthless.
But, Your Honor, once my client had an ownership interest in it, it was free to do or not to do whatever it wanted.
That's ridiculous. It's given the ownership interest so that it can produce oil to satisfy these various claimants in the receivership. That's the whole purpose of the agreement.
No, Your Honor, I'm sorry. That wasn't exactly
it. What earthly purpose is it to give the property, the fee simple, to Sonko so that it can sit on it? And the creditors get nothing. What sense does that make?
The receiver wasn't to get anything from the production of the oil wells, Your Honor. My client had bought them outright, so it could do or not do whatever it chose to do with them. The receiver at that point no longer had any interest in them. Whether my client produced them or not, it wasn't going to get any of the money from the production. The point of the settlement agreement wasn't to have my client operate the oil wells for the benefit of the receiver.
The
point
the purpose of the settlement
was to resolve the issue of ownership vis-a-vis these oil wells, and my client and the receiver settled that by my client paying some money and getting and buying the oil wells so that it could do and proceed as it chose.
This order is that for $600,000, Sonko gets the oil wells and it can sit on them and doesn't have to produce anything. Is that what it amounts to you? Your argument?
No, that's not all that my argument amounts to, Your Honor, but it was certainly entitled to do
that. What's the rest of your argument?
The rest of my argument is, even if there was an order for it to become the operator, My client did show that it had substantially complied with that order, which is also a requirement to find my client in contempt. The Primatech case shows that a violation must be significant, and my client had taken all the steps necessary to become the operator. The ultimate determination of operatorship rests with the Texas Railroad Commission, over which my client has no control. It had submitted the necessary paperwork to the Texas Railroad Commission to become the operator.
Why did it take so long to submit that paperwork with the commission?
Your Honor, that's not part of the record, and I don't actually have – I don't know why it took my client as long as it did to do that. I can't make excuses, and certainly we may not be here if he had been more timely with respect to that, but he did – the court ultimately set a time frame in January of 2011. He set a time frame by the end of February or toward the end of February, and my client complied within the time frame that was ultimately set by the district court to do the things that were set forth in the January of 2010 agreed order, so that my client did substantially comply. Your Honor, I see that I'm going into my rebuttal time, so I will wait for that. Thank you.
Mr. Sullivan?
May it please the Court, Sean Sullivan on behalf of the receiver, and I'll be arguing on behalf of the receiver and Alcoa Oil and Gas Company.
Do you know whether the receiver has any money left? Has all the $600,000 been dispersed?
It has been dispersed, Your Honor. And in terms of the receivership monies in toto, beyond what was handed over by Sunco as part of the mass settlement, which involved a lot more than oil and gas wells.
So how does that affect mootness?
Well, I'd like to get to that because it affects.
Before you do, has any accounting been made to the district court with respect to the disbursement of that $600,000?
Yes, it has.
Is that part of the record before us?
I don't believe so because it happened after, at the time that the appellee's brief was being filed in the motion for Rule 38 dismissal, the Sunco tried to challenge our ability to distribute the funds to the defrauded investors. The district court didn't go
ahead and get into the mootness. I may want to return to that in a later point.
Your Honor. We believe the case is frivolous because the result of it was foreordained. The mootness rule begins with Article 3, and we don't believe that there's a case or controversy here. As it says in Porco.
Does the receiver have any assets?
It would be minimal, but yes, it has cash on hand to pay its current and outstanding.
But doesn't that avoid mootness because Sunco wants its $600,000 back, but it'll, you know, if they're only $1,000, prefer $1,000 to nothing.
It still would be moot because they don't have a claim. They don't have a reimbursement claim against the receivership. They'd have to have a claim would have to exist. That $600,000 went to far more. This wasn't a purchase agreement money for wells. This was a settlement agreement settling claims. And the value that was accorded for the various things that the settlement agreement was covering.
I did pay something to the receiver.
$600,000.
And it claims that it's entitled to that money back.
Well, initially it claimed that it was entitled to the property back. It wasn't until we raised mootness.
But it can't get the property back, so it wants some money. And it claimed, you know, that the receiver has acted wrongfully and it's entitled to this money back. And why isn't that enough to keep the appeal alive?
Well, the case law in the Seventh Circuit and everywhere else that I have found requires the appellant to file a stay to keep the property, which is the subject of the litigation.
No, that's true. That's fine. The property is gone. But if they have a money claim against the receiver, why doesn't that keep the appeal alive? I don't understand.
Well, first of all, they do not have a money claim against the receiver. They've made one up when we raised the mootness argument. There was never a money claim against the receiver prior to that. And the case law that deals with that, for instance, let's take Porco, for example. In Porco, that was a reimbursement claim that Porco, the party that was suing the Indiana University trustees, he had a reimbursement claim But in that case, because of the 11th Amendment, Indiana University was not...
You're saying their failure to seek a stay means that they wanted the property, that's what they wanted. They wanted their... Well, what is it that they originally... It was originally a claim for the property itself, for the oil wells back? Is that what they wanted?
Yes, Your Honor, and in fact...
And you're saying that because they didn't seek a stay and the receiver went ahead and gave these properties, to Wilson or something, that by doing that, they allowed their claim to become moot. And you're saying they have no other claim against the receiver.
That's correct. And I found no cases that would justify sitting on the opportunity to file a stay, not following through with it, and then trying to make up a claim thereafter. There's no claim against the receiver because the receiver did everything it was required to do pursuant to the court's order. The property has transferred twice since the March 1st, 2011 order, and that is, the order does say that is what's to happen with it. It's to go to a buyer operator that's actually going to operate it. They have operated it. They've spent $500,000 to date bringing it into compliance with the Texas Railroad Commission, environmental concerns, and landowners. So in that sense, the district court's order did what it set out to accomplish to do, to appease the interests of Texas.
Maybe you could say something. The difficulty I have had preparing for this argument is that the parties have been squabbling for such a long time and that they and the district judge are so deeply embedded in this controversy that they haven't explained it to the outsiders. At least I don't understand it. So, what was the purpose of the agreed order? Ms. Holman said there's no benefit to any of the creditors. So what was going on? What was it about?
Well, actually, the leases themselves would constitute a liability. The leases that were part of the settlement agreement.
Leases?
The oil and gas leases.
I thought Sunco, was Sunco the owner of these oil wells?
No. The receiver was by way of one of the robotic tools, as they're referred to, that were part of the receivership. So the oil and gas...
What is this about the interest that Sunco obtained in the 90s? What's that about?
Sunco has been interested in these parties.
What does that mean?
This is a Ponzi case, and in these Ponzi cases, to have an interest in or say you have an interest in an asset enables you to go out and get investors to invest in these supposed assets.
Sunco claimed an interest in the 90s.
They've actually...
I think is spurious. But so what is it that leads up to this settlement? What is the purpose of this agreed order?
With agreed order embodied in its entirety, the joint motion...
Sunco is a Ponzi. I mean, it seems to be treated nicely in the order. I don't understand.
Yeah. They were the recipient of some defrauded investor funds. The overall case is about a Ponzi scheme. And is related to a Ponzi scheme that was in Canada. Part of the settlement agreement between the parties, between Sunco, ALCO, and the receiver...
Are you talking about the 2010 or the January 2010 order?
I am.
Okay.
I am, and in fact, in that order and in the joint settlement agreement filed 5 days preceding it to obtain the order, the parties agreed that when the money came in, it was going back out to the parties that were settling. For instance, in Canada, there were the $2 million worth of defrauded investor funds came into Sunco and its principal. And so we were going to obtain a release for them for that. And they were going to get their share. The independent contractors...
What is Sunco's role in the agreed order? I don't understand that.
Okay. Their role in the agreed order as it relates to the leases, the oil and gas leases, is to take the leases, take over ALCO's responsibility as the operator for those leases, and move on its merry way, really. The case should have been over on January 20th, 2010.
Suppose Sunco had done that, had taken over the leases, it had gotten its permission to pump from the Texas Railroad Commission. Suppose all that had happened. How does that help the creditors?
Well, the defrauded investors would have received $250,000 because Sunco would have become what's called the P4 operator, the operator that's approved by the Texas Railroad Commission, which is the mere filing of a piece of paper. And
okay, so suppose Sunco had filed a piece of paper. Now it's the P4 operator. Then what happens? Does it then owe money to people or what?
Well, as a P4 operator, you have to file. You have to have financial assurance on file. And in this case, and as part of the agreed order, Sunco was required to put up $250,000 worth of financial assurance and replace the ALCO bond that was on file with the Texas Railroad Commission.
Okay, now what would happen to the $250,000?
So we had prearranged, the receiver and ALCO had prearranged to obtain the $250,000 from the Texas Railroad Commission once Sunco put up the $250,000, replacing our $250,000 bond. So that would be additional $250,000 that would come into the receivership and be distributed.
Replacing the ALCO bond, how would that help the receiver?
Well, the receiver would be able to obtain the $250,000 bond. That ALCO bond was also acquired with defrauded investor funds, and that's why we were trying to get it back, and that's why it was part of the settlement agreement.
And that's part of the $250,000 also?
It's all of the $250,000.
Okay, so the agreed order would have given the receiver $250,000. So is that what we're arguing about, that by not going to the Texas Railroad Commission, Sunco cheated the receiver out of $250,000. Is that what the case comes down to?
Well, that's part of it, Your Honor. They also didn't replace ALCO as the operator and left ALCO on the hook for all the liability of the leases, which by conservative estimates, according to the Texas Railroad Commission website, was $430,000.
That's why ALCO is a party here?
Yes, Your Honor.
As well as the receiver?
Yes, Your Honor. And the Texas Railroad Commission has conservatively found that to be, at the time of the agreed order, January 20th, 2010, to be $439,000. As I've already said, the operators that are out there right now have already spent $500,000, so that was a conservative estimate. So they've already spent that amount of money just getting the oil wells back up to code.
Okay, well, that's very helpful. Thank you.
It's worth mentioning, Your Honor, that the distribution of the funds, to the extent we could still talk about mootness, was agreed to in the joint motion for a settlement agreement and was embodied in the agreed order, the January 20, 2010 agreed order. So it wasn't news that the funds would be outgoing when Sunco paid in those monies, because various releases, independent contractors and such had to be paid.
Was it part of the agreed order that the $600,000 would stay with the receiver and ALCO?
Yes, and it has the same language. It's in the joint motion for settlement approval that those funds would then be distributed. Now, there was still some left for the receiver to be able to pay out to the defrauded investors, which is the main reason the receivership exists, but that over the year also got eaten into by the litigation that continued on with
Sunco. Somewhat concerned after our FTC against Trudeau case as to whether the district court had been sufficiently precise in delineating what that $600,000 should be used for.
Well, if we can do what the March 1st order of remedy says, and that is encapsulate the transcripts, the hearing material, the evidence that was submitted at hearing leading up to that finding of contempt, as well as the filings that were done that the court relied on, including the proposed order, which set out the value of this change in agreement, then the benefit to Sunco being relieved of this liability is far greater than the money that they put in. This was a liability. These oil and gas wells were a liability. But this isn't a case like FTC versus Trudeau, where you have the profits and you know a party's being told not to do something. They had unfair gains, and those had to be given back. The main reason that Judge Miller cites as the finding for contempt and the reason to get Sunco out of there was because the oil and gas wells were just not being operated. ALCO was still on the hook for all the liability. The Texas Railroad Commission has got to do something with these oil and gas interests, because that's an economic interest of the state. There are environmental concerns involved. What the court needed to do was to get Sunco out, as opposed to penalize somebody for what they were doing. But It ended up being a great...
The interest is not so much getting the oil and gas wells working as it is to get ALCO off the hook.
I'd say it was both. If the language that was used in the order of remedy cited all of them right there at the beginning to compensate the parties for the undue losses that they've experienced because Sunco refused to become the operator. The Texas regulatory system, which needs to be able to regulate these leases, and there's been a freeze that was in place for 7 years, I think. Judge Miller said it would be an abuse of the federal system for us to keep this going any longer. And Sunco did show, by way, we found in April 2011 P4 that they filed in Texas. They did show that they know how to fill them out and they can get it approved that very same day, and that is in the record. That they were able to do that.
But Ms. Homan said that by paying the $600,000 to the receiver, Sunco became the free and clear owner of the wells and could do anything with them that it wanted.
Yeah, and it's an interesting statement to make because they did have title to the leases, and yet ALCO had all the liability, so and that is why there was evidence submitted that this is not the way that you can do an oil and gas transaction. At closing, the operator has to be replaced or there has to be an agreement.
What do you mean when you say ALCO had all the liability?
Well, ALCO was still the of-record operator.
But what kind of liability do you have as the on-record operator?
According to the Texas Railroad Commission site, they were responsible for $439,000 worth of cleanup of violations at the time that we entered the agreement. So the agreement was in part to relieve ALCO of its liability. And in the agreed order, it mentioned seven times that about operation, and you couldn't get a...
If Sunco replaced ALCO, would it owe the $493,000? That cleanup cost?
That would have, I'm sure Sunco, or if Sunco said it, that we were willing to pay you, I might not understand the question.
Well, you say ALCO had a $493,000 liability for cleaning up these wells, and that the agreed order contemplated Sunco, or maybe required Sunco, to replace ALCO as the operator. Does that mean the liability would become Sunco's?
Yes.
Something to work at wood.
Right. Yeah, you own the asset, you take the liabilities along with it. And that figure, the $439,000 figure, is just a figure that the Texas Railroad Commission came up for these wells that were transferred, what it would take to get them into compliance. It turns out what happens in real life is some of them you have to plug because they just can't be brought into compliance, and that's why the parties that are out there right now have spent $500,000 cleaning up.
I just had one question about the attorney's fees. There was no specific finding by the district court on that amount, was there?
Yes. The attorney's fees that were found as part of the March 1st order of remedy, there was a specific figure, and there was documentation supplied to the court at the hearing.
And there was no objection to it? I just wasn't clear on that. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Is Mr. Katz going to argue, or...?
I was, Your Honor, but I think we've used up all our time.
You can certainly have a minute or two. So you're ALCO, right?
I am.
Okay.
There are a couple points I wanted to clear up about whether or not Sunco was to be the operator, because that would have taken ALCO off the hook with the Texas Railroad Commission. Under the court's order, the agreed order, Sunco could not sit back and do nothing even though it became the owner. It was implicit and inherent in that agreement that Sunco would become the operator. And, in fact, in June of 2010, there was communication between Ms. Homan on behalf of Sunco acknowledging that responsibility to become the operator. And the subsequent request for continuance before the district court were that Sunco could complete this process. Even though Sunco did not submit any documentation for ALCO to sign, because for Sonco to become the operator, all ALCO had to do was sign a P4. That was all we had to do. Those P4s did not come until, I believe, February 17th of 2011, just before the court's absolute final deadline. Not even enough time once they were signed, and by the way, they were signed the day they came and they went back FedEx overnight, priority, not enough time for the Texas Railroad Commission to even process them. That's why they got past the March 1st date. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to bring the court's attention.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Katz. So, Ms. Homan, how much time does she have left? You have 4 minutes, 3 minutes? Okay.
So can you respond to this argument about the fact that your client didn't file a stay against the receiver to transfer property and that you don't have any other claims, and why the receiver should have to use other funds, and that that keeps you in the game here and is not moot?
Certainly. Obviously, the mootness issue goes to the issue of impossibility. And as we set forth in our brief, there are three possible ways for my client to recover. It's not correct to say that my client never made a claim. It made a claim as soon as this, as part of this appeal, that the $600,000 that the receiver kept, it wasn't entitled to keep. And so to say that we don't have a claim would not really be correct, because we made that claim as part of this appeal, of course, that the receiver wasn't entitled to those funds. So to the extent that there are assets in the receivership, no matter how small or how large, those assets should be available to my client if the receiver kept that money and should not have. So that this case is not moot, because it's not impossible for my client to recover some or all of the $600,000.
Well, the puzzle is, if your claim was for the property, if you just brought a suit or filed a claim or what have you, in which you're asking for return of specific property, and the property is sold while the proceeding is going on, how can you appeal from the sale that's gone through? That's the puzzle.
Of course, there were many parts to the district court's sanction order, but two of the parts that most primarily affect my client were that it was required to give the property back to the receiver that had been deeded to it, its interest in these oil wells, the leases of the oil wells, and then secondly was this issue that the receiver got to also keep the money that Sonco had paid to the receiver for its interest in the oil wells.
He made that claim in the district court that if you couldn't get the money back, if you couldn't get the property, at least you should get your money back.
As part of our response to when the court asked us to submit something with respect to the sanctions order, but the judge entered a different sanction order. So we're here to say that sanction order was improper, and that we should be entitled to, if we can't have the property back, and we do have a Liz Pendens argument about that that's controlled by state law, but that to the extent that there are assets that the receivership holds, that there are, I understand, Oklahoma oil wells as well as cash, that my client would be entitled to recover the sanction that was improperly rendered against it as a result of the Trudeau case.
What is this Liz Pendens about? Why did you file a Liz Pendens?
We filed a Liz Pendens to put any people who would take an interest in those same oil wells in Texas on notice that my client was making a claim to the property.
So why didn't you seek a stay?
There's a substantial amount of money that's involved in seeking a stay, involved in that. And so, you know, choices have to be made in litigation for reasons that don't have to do necessarily with the litigation, but have to do with other reasons.
Now, is the only sanction, so there's a, so you're appealing a sanction order. Is the only thing in that sanction order taking away your claimed property? Is that the only thing in the sanction order?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not sure I understand your
question. Sanction. Is the only sanction that the district judge imposed against you taking away any interest you might have in the oil wells?
That and keeping the $600,000 that we paid for the oil wells, that Sanko paid for the oil wells.
So you're saying that, so if I'm restating your mootness argument, if I can, you're saying that the sanction is really two parts. You lose your property and you don't get your money back. That the loss of property part, that is moot, because the property is gone and can't be recovered, but that you're still complaining about the sanction that consists of refusing to return your $600,000. Is that correct?
Right. That the fact that the Trudeau case, the requirement to support the sanctions order with a calculation methodology, which was not filed by the district court in its findings. There was no finding of methodology, and it would be probably odd for their losses to be exactly $600,000. And there wasn't any calculation methodology.
At worst, the district judge should have rescinded the agreement by which you'd gotten the property for $600,000. And if he'd rescinded it, the property would be gone, but you'd get the $600,000 back. Is that what you're arguing?
Well, certainly we believe that we're entitled to the $600,000 back, Your Honor. Yes. Yes, indeed, we are. And that it's an improper sanction and improperly entered as a result of the lack of calculation methodology.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel.
Thank you.
And